Hi, it's Mina Kimes, host of the ESPN Daily podcast. Wake up to the best story you'll hear all day. 20 minutes a day, 5 days a week, where you get an inside look at the most interesting stories at ESPN, as told by the top reporters and insiders on the planet. The breaking news of SportsCenter with the deep dive storytelling of 30 for 30. Today's episode is one I thought you'd especially like. Please listen and subscribe to ESPN Daily wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Breaking news, the NCAA has ruled Memphis big man James Wiseman, the possible number one overall pick in 2020, ineligible, according to his lawyers.
That was Friday, when University of Memphis freshman James Wiseman, the number one ranked recruit in the country, was ruled ineligible by the NCAA. But just hours later, Wiseman was back in the starting lineup after challenging the governing body in court. It's a risky strategy for Wiseman in Memphis, but could their aggressive response become the new normal in college sports? I'm Mina Kimes. It's Tuesday, November 12th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by Indeed. Jay, this news came out Friday afternoon. What was your reaction when you first heard it?
Well, my first reaction is more of the same. I mean, it came out the same day that Chase Young at Ohio State was suspended for something similar.
Jay Billis is a college basketball analyst for ESPN and will be calling the game between Memphis and Oregon tonight.
So this is not horribly unusual. It's frankly right in the NCAA's wheelhouse. It's just frustrating because it's a rule that most people, most fair-minded people, don't agree with. It's just an unusual situation to have a coach that coached a prospect when he was in high school, ultimately becoming his college coach. That doesn't happen very often. So the circumstances are somewhat unique. But what's really unique about this, Mina, is the response of Memphis here. And the president and the athletic director basically saying, look, we know how this goes, but we're not doing it your way. We get to decide whether he plays or not. And then you, the NCAA, you can come in afterwards and tell us we were wrong. And then we'll accept the consequences on the back end. That's really unusual.
Let's back up. So Penny Hardaway is just in his second year as Memphis' coach, but he had the number one recruiting class this year and obviously got James Wiseman to come to Memphis. What was his path to becoming the head coach?
Penny Hardaway has been living in Memphis. First, he was working as basically an AAU coach and then wound up coaching in high school. Now, he became the head coach at Memphis East, a very good high school program, and had a lot of great players there and coached a lot of great players with his AAU program. It was not unforeseeable that he would ultimately become the coach at Memphis. When Tubby Smith, who was the prior coach, was struggling, everybody was talking about Penny Hardaway taking over for him because he had so many players.
How did Penny's relationship with James Wiseman begin in the first place?
It began through basketball. From a very young age, people knew that Wiseman was going to be a great player. I mean, he's 7 foot tall, left-handed, extraordinarily athletic and skilled.
Wiseman, a guy you can throw it into. He can make moves in the post, finish around the basket. He runs the floor like a deer.
I mean, he's a fantastic player. So it didn't take a basketball genius to figure out he was going to be good. So, you know, in the AAU circuit, relationships are established between coaches and players at a very early age because of how the summer basketball culture works. The NCAA is saying that when Penny Hardaway was a high school coach, he gave $11,500 to James Wiseman's mother so that her family could relocate from Nashville, Tennessee to Memphis. And the family stated that it was because they wanted to be closer to their daughter, who was a student at Memphis. Wiseman later played for Penny Hardaway at Memphis East High School. And so they're saying that Hardaway, when he gave that money to the Wiseman family, was a booster of the University of Memphis because he played there and he gave money there back in 2008. He gave $1 million or so for an athletic Hall of Fame. That's what the allegation is, that a booster provided an impermissible benefit to a prospect. And it benefited the university.
So I graduated from college in 2007. If I gave, say, $50 to my alma mater, 20 years later, am I a booster?
That's the issue that Wiseman's attorneys are raising. And they're saying because these rules are so vague, they're unenforceable and don't apply. And that's been an argument for a long time with the NCAA. Like if I join a booster club and I pay, as you said, $50 and I get a sticker for my car, does that mean I can't interact with any young athlete that I may know? And especially if I'm coaching that athlete, the answer up until now has been, yes, you're still a booster, and no, you can't do any of these things.
James Wiseman ruled ineligible by the NCAA about an hour ago because they say that his coach, Penny Hardaway, paid for his move from Nashville to Memphis 2 years ago when he was still in high school. About 20 minutes later, Wiseman ruled eligible because of a temporary restraining order from a local judge. What a wild, chaotic scene it's been today.
James Wiseman actually had attorneys, and so they went to a local court in Shelby County in Tennessee, and they asked for a temporary restraining order from a local judge. I mean, it was extraordinary that they ran to court in the afternoon and got the TRO, and then Wiseman played that night.
Think about this, Robbie. James Wiseman and Penny Hardaway were in a courtroom here in Memphis between shoot-around early this afternoon and the game, which started here at 6 o'clock local time.
But when the TRO was issued, that doesn't mean that the university has to play Wiseman. It was still their decision. So they still could have said, look, we understand you got this temporary restraining order and the NCAA can't stop you from playing, but we can. We're not going to do this because we're taking substantial risk here. Memphis chose not to do that. The president of the university put out a statement that basically said, hey, we believe in compliance and integrity and all this stuff, but we think this is unfair and we're going to fight it.
How did he play on Friday?
He played great.
Wiseman, a post touch. And he's got his first bucket tonight.
That's the skill set right there. Takes his time.
I mean, he's a great player. Illinois-Chicago is not a very good team. They beat him by a ton. But they play Oregon on Tuesday night. Oregon's a top 20 team. And that'll be the biggest test they have in the early season. And, you know, my expectation is, absent some court order, they're going to play Wiseman. Selfishly, I hope Memphis wins this, and I hope Wiseman plays every game because I want to watch him play. And I think most people feel that way. I look at this going, okay, $11,000 relocation. Who cares? I don't care. Some people do, and that's fine, but I don't care. Having seen these things so many times, it usually doesn't work out well for the school that does something like this. And I'll give you an example. Like in 2008, Derrick Rose played for Memphis when John Calipari was the coach. There was a question about his high school test scores, and the NCAA during the course of the year told Memphis, it's okay to play him. We think there's an eligibility problem, but it's okay to play him. So played him the whole year. They went to the national championship game, lost to Kansas. And then after the year was over, the NCAA came in and said, nope, he was ineligible. All those games are vacated, and vacated all the games. They said Memphis didn't know, John Calipari didn't know, or at least they didn't charge him with having any knowledge or that they knew or should have known, but they vacated every game. And so Memphis has that history as well, and their fans still remember that. So I think their fans are willing to go ahead. We'll go to the national championship game. You want to vacate it later? Fine, because we remember. And I think the administration is certainly at least a little bit affected by that.
Why do you think Memphis responded the way they did?
We've seen this, Mina, over the last several years. I mean, it used to be that when the NCAA said bow down and sacrifice on the altar of the NCAA and beg for mercy, that everybody did it. And in the last several years, everybody's fighting now. It's an extraordinary step for a president to come out with a statement saying, you know what, we're not playing by your rules. We're doing it our way.
After the break, what's next in the battle over Wiseman's eligibility? And is this part of a shift in the balance of power between schools and the NCAA? This is a program that got good very quickly with the number one recruiting class this year and a very high-profile head coach. Do you think those factors sort of trained the NCAA's eye on them at all?
Absolutely. There's no question that I think the more high-profile recruits you bring in, the more scrutiny you get from the NCAA. There are certainly things you can point to and say, well, wait a minute. James Wiseman, during his recruiting visit, Penny Hardaway is reported to have sent Zach Randolph to his home right before he had a home visit and the rapper Moneybagg. you know, there are pictures on the internet about it, all that, social media, that certainly would raise some eyebrows. I'm not saying there's anything illegal or improper about it, but I think for an organization like the NCAA, it gets their antenna up.
So what happens next between the NCAA and Memphis?
So the NCAA is in a bad spot here. They got some bad rules, but they have to enforce them. And now the question is, what do they do from here? You know, Memphis got a local judge to give them a temporary restraining order. Does the NCAA go in this week and fight that? Do they, you know, sort of fight this in this county courthouse where, you know, it's an away game for them? Do they remove it to federal court? How do they do this? Because one thing the NCAA has shown over the years is they will spend any amount of money to, one, to keep from giving the players any, and two, they will spend any amount of money so that they can make their own rules and enforce their own rules the way they want to without third parties coming in and telling them how to do it. And so my sense is, and it's just a sense, that they're going to fight Memphis on this, but still Memphis gets to play them if they want to. If the NCAA comes out and makes another public statement and says, we have determined that James Wiseman is ineligible, and it's some sort of final determination, what if Memphis says, well, screw you, we're playing him anyway? You know, do they cancel games? Do the opposing team say, well, we're not going to play you when the NCAA says you've got an ineligible player on the floor? Just a very weird situation that I've never seen before.
Jay, just from a basketball perspective, Memphis was ranked 14th in the preseason poll. How much does having James Wiseman affect their prospects this year, and how high is their ceiling?
Well, it affects their prospects. I mean, it's their whole season. If Wiseman doesn't play, they're a group of freshmen that have talent, but they don't have an anchor. It's like, how would the Fab Five have done without Chris Webber? That's basically what you're looking at. And I don't think some of their other players are as good as Jalen Rose was and all that. This kid, James Wiseman, is the equivalent of Chris Webber to this recruiting class. You take him away, and I don't think they're a top 25 team. And they know that. Memphis knows that. And so in part, you can't blame them, because in a way, their season teeters upon this decision.
Jay, this news dropped not long after the NCAA came out and said, hey, we're going to consider changing our rules regarding whether players can make money off of their name, images, and likeness. Now, they didn't say they were going to do it. They said they were going to consider it. But there is this sense that they're being sort of attacked on multiple fronts. Do you think in standing up to them, Memphis sensed blood in the water?
I think it's partly that, but not all of it. This is unusual. This is a president basically giving the middle finger to the NCAA, saying, look, we're doing it our way. And if you don't like it, too bad. And that is extraordinary. And I've never seen anything like this from that standpoint. People are behind Memphis in fighting this. A lot of people see the NCAA as the evil empire here. I don't agree with that. I think they get overzealous at times. And I think the system is hypocritical. Absolutely. But I don't see the people involved as being evil. They've got rules that they're expected to enforce. And so then we're asking them to be a cop on the side of the road saying, all right, I'm just going to give you a warning here.
The decision, the announcement was pretty swiftly ridiculed on Twitter. I mean, it's not just Memphis fans who are opposed to the NCAA here. I was wondering, as someone who's been outspoken on this issue for quite some time, do you feel like there's been a sea change in public opinion?
Well, it's louder now. I think most of the public has always felt like, well, that doesn't sound fair. But there has been a little bit of a shift. I also think that most people understand that money being exchanged in college sports is prevalent. And this is probably just the tip of the iceberg for most of what happens. So they're going, come on, man, there's a lot of this going on. Why are we drawing arbitrary lines here, here, and here? Clearly, the public wants to see the kid play. And heck, I want to see the kid play. I just don't think ultimately Memphis is going to prevail on this.
Thanks, Jay.
Thank you.
I'll be back in a moment with one more story. Now, here's another story I want you to know. The two biggest winners in college football this weekend were LSU and Minnesota. And between Joe Burrow and the Gophers, you could say it was a big day for tunneling. Now, we already talked about the LSU offense on Friday, So I wanted to give a tip of the hat today to PJ Fleck's program in Minneapolis, which is now 9-0 after upsetting Penn State.
Crowd is going nuts right now. Talking defense here. Sideline going crazy. Quarterback Clifford waits for the snap with Brown next to him on third down and 23. Has time, waiting, pressure comes, firing toward the end zone, intercepted! Gophers got it! It's picked off by Jordan Howden in the end zone!
Minnesota's ranked 7th in the AP poll, landing in the top 10 for the first time in 57 years. Now, if you're on sports Twitter, one, I'm sorry, and two, you're probably familiar with that thing where people write, "That aged well," or "That didn't age well," in response to tweets. And if I'm being honest, I don't really understand what motivates people to weigh in with that trope, but I'm going to do it here. Minnesota hired PJ Fleck in 2017, and after the team got off to a hot start this season, they signed him to a multi-year contract extension last Tuesday. They were betting that while the team hadn't really played significant competition up to that point, their best win might have been over Fresno State, things were headed in the right direction. Well, that aged well. In the not-too-distant past, Minnesota was one of the worst Power 5 teams in the country, drawing minimal crowds. Now they're getting kudos from alumni like Ric Flair. They're storming the field, the lion sleeps tonight, and they're watching PJ Fleck crowd surf in the locker room. Now, it's still plausible that a blue-chip school might lure him away and buy out his contract, but I really hope not, because it seems like a perfect match between an unusually enthusiastic coach and a once dormant fan base. PJ Fleck's saying is row the boat, and for Minnesota, life these days is but a dream. I'm Mina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.